Hello and welcome to Infamous, the audio podcast. This is Brandon or Mutilus on Discord.
This is Parker, go by one who parks on Discord.
This is Jeremy. I go by hashtag birds aren't real / Jeremy, just Jeremy.
And this is Aaron. I go by Treffenwood.
So last week, Parker, do you want to guess what your punishment for not showing up was?
I don't want to know.
It was... Well, actually, before we tell you, I just want you to know there's a different punishment because you didn't listen to the episode. So do you want to... If I put the over-under at 100 episodes, would you take the over or the under?
Over-under at 100 episodes.
Yeah, so basically I'd say, regardless of what happened last week, I'll let you replace it with 100 episodes if you want. So if it was less than 100, you'll gain more. But if it was over 100, you'll lose some.
I'm sure it was over 100.
So you want to swap?
Yeah, I'll say that. I think I got over 100 of a penalty. Yeah.
For not showing up.
For not showing up.
Aaron, do you want to tell him how many it was?
No, I can't.
It was one. I gave you one.
Standard punishment.
Thanks. So after showing up this week, that puts you at 36.92. And then we're going to have to come up with something else for you missing... missing, not listening to the episode, but that's fine. We'll move on for now.
God damn it. Oh my God. What is it going to take for me to stop falling for your guys' bullshit? It's always the same joke. Parker, here's something that's really, really likely, and here's something that you think actually happened.
Here's a gun. It may or may not be loaded, but you like to point it at your foot and find out?
Well, you gotta look down the barrel, see if there's bullets in there. All right, other announcements we have today. As always, we've got the links in the show notes. I hear, a little birdie named Nigel, that Muzon Minis is up and running again. They've had a lot of mechanical issues lately that have unfortunately stopped them from producing content or physical products. So if you want Muzon Mini stuff, you should go contact Nigel with Muse. They're good guys over there. They're also in the works. They're producing some stuff for us, so that will be on the way soon. For anyone who doesn't know, I have an Etsy store now for the show. Mostly we sell random cool sculptures and things, but also we sell Judgment Terrain and Judgment Monsters and some other stuff. But also, starting probably next month, we're going to start doing Patreon giveaways again. So keep an eye out for that if you're in the Patreon channel. All right. Next up, we've got no news, right?
Oh, we have news. We have news.
Hey, news, 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 news.
We have news. This might be the thing I am most interested in talking about. Excited is not the word, but interested in talking about. Was it a distributor conference of some kind? It wasn't for any.
It's a Gamma Games convention.
Manufacturers Association.
Retailer convention. You go there if you run a store generally, and you see spoilers and stuff.
Okay, so at one of these conventions, they have spoiled the next. Or a box that's coming out soon, and it is July, which is we had never heard about this box until now. We've had other boxes, several others that we got spoiled, but this one is coming out of the blue. Black Panther, Chosen of Bast, and Neymar, the Submariner,
Submariner,
because he's a submariner or he's a submariner. But he's one of those two things. Those
cool Aquaman is his official title.
Yeah. Winged Aquaman is his title. And so they're coming out. I'll let you guys go first. I'll let you.
Jeremy, what do you think about the Black Panthers?
Oh, man. How can I contain my excitement of another Black Panther right after getting finally a release, which is another Black Panther? Holy shit. And the least excited, really, Submariner, really? Motherfucker talks to fish. Who gives a shit?
Ankle wings.
He actually does not talk to fish. He gives a fuck about fish. It might be better if he talked to fish.
I don't know, man. It seems like a Submariner kind of thing. Uninterested.
Aaron?
So all these models are 80% stats with the face to me. So it means nothing until I see the stats. The other 20%, though, I really like that Panther sculpt. Don't care for the Namor sculpt. But, yeah, that Panther sculpt is, I think, my favorite of the three. So I like the Panther sculpt a lot. Don't care about the Namor one. And all of it's irrelevant until we see what the rules are. And I understand people don't want Black Panther 3 since we just got Black Panther 2. I don't really care. Just continue to produce fun and interesting models for the game.
Yeah, I don't know that I care either. Like, the things getting backed up on top of each other, I don't think really matters unless they're a really unpopular character. Like, if we got Viper 2 immediately after Viper 1, like, that'd obviously be asinine, but...
I'd buy the shit out of that.
Yeah, I bet you would. Yeah, I guess when it comes down to it for me, I'm not in a particular hurry to get anywhere in the game. Like, obviously I want Doom to come out, but I don't want him to be, forced out earlier than, they're ready for. And so, I don't know. I'm pretty content with the models we have in the game already. I'm not, dying for new models that don't exist. And I understand, I think, better than a lot of people, the infrastructure release cycle that they have to deal with. And so, the specific order doesn't bother me really at all. So I don't get the anger. I think people are overreacting a bit. We also have no idea when this thing's coming out. This could be next year.
It's July.
July.
I didn't know it was out in July. I still don't care. Okay. Honestly, it actually makes sense when you think about it. All the Wakanda stuff's in, a 3-month period? That makes sense.
They started last year, July. Whatever. Yeah. Okay, Parker, cue overreaction.
So, I did. I overreacted really hard when I saw this. It made me very, very upset. Not because I hate Namor. I actually really like Namor. I've read a ton of Namor-only titles. I enjoy them. I think he's a cool character. So, I'm going to put Namor totally aside and feel totally fine. I'm excited to have Namor in the game. I will probably play him, even if his rules are not fantastic, because I like Namor. I do not know why they would put Black Panther again in the box. They are rivals a lot in the modern Marvel universe, so I can see it a little. They are, of course, rivals. The Kingdom, at least, is. But I don't know. A lot of people are supposing this could be a previous Black Panther. The big high collar around his neck kind of intimates that, because some of the other ones in the lore had that. His costume's a little bit different, so maybe it's Black Panther's dad, or an ancient descendant of his, or maybe the one during World War II, because Namor also fought in World War II, so it's kind of the same era as the Captain America we got for S.H.I.E.L.D. There's a couple different things floating around for that, but I like when the game expands. I like when the game gets wider, not the same character 3 times. I just don't. My first instinct is, ugh, another thing I already have. And that's probably wrong. I think you guys all have really good points, which is maybe his rules are great and he'll feel so different than the others. There's so many things that go behind making a game that have nothing to do with what the company might like to do in terms of spreading the love amongst IPs in the Marvel Universe. But it purely from a 100% irrational, emotional feeling, I want to see more of my Marvel universe come to life. The point of this game, I think, ostensibly, is to let people play the Marvel characters they love. And the fact that there are so many mainliners that aren't in the game yet, and it just makes me a little upset whenever they reach for Black Panther yet a third time, or even if it's worse, Black Panther's dad. Who gives a shit about Black Panther's dad?
That was kind of my next question, is do we know which Black Panther it is?
It's hard to tell, but it could be Black Panther's dad or his grandpa or his uncle. It's not his uncle. But the point is, if it is Black Panther's dad, in my mind, it actually might make it worse. I would rather see Black Panther again than Black Panther's dad, because then you go, why did you choose Black Panther's dad? Why didn't you pick any other character of the Marvel Universe, even one that's tangentially related to Namor? You could do it. I would have been okay if they put fucking Namorita, Namor's cousin, in it. she is actually a character that shows up in multiple places in the Marvel Universe, and she matters somewhat. Even though she's a weird D-lister, it would still make more sense to expand the game than it does to put yet another Black Panther. So, one of the things about the game that I use when I sell the game to people is, what kind of characters do you like in the Marvel Universe? And if they say Black Panther, fuck, their day is made, right? They got three Black Panthers to choose from. But if they say Mr. Fantastic, I gotta go, well, he's not in the game yet. And they go, okay, well,
luckily nobody would ever say that.
If they say, you know, Angel or Archangel from the X-Men, I go, well, he's not in the game yet. You know,
nobody would ever say that either.
I guess there are lots and lots of characters from the Marvel Universe that you might enjoy that just conspicuously are missing from this game, and then you need Black Panther 3. So I'm just going to say I was outraged at the beginning, and now I am less so because I cooled down. But
I would just like to ask everybody who is immediately upset by this to just ponder the stuff that goes into deciding when a model comes out. And then, like, I think that will really relieve a lot of the anxiety. But you have to worry about, like, obviously they can't release, like, just random people that are part of, like, a really important faction without, like, a lot of support for it. And so you have to future-proof everything. Like, let's say, for example, they wanted to release Human Torch. And they was like, well, if we want to release Human Torch, we have to do the Fantastic Four. And then we have to do bad guys for Fantastic Four. Then we have to do tactics cards for everything. And so by the time you design all of these models that all go together, then you have to look at your actual release cycle. And so you have to look at stuff like, maybe Disney wants them to release like products next to media. So maybe they have to wait for that kind of stuff because their Disney rep that gives them their license tells them that they want that to come out next year. And so, like, they might not even have a choice in that aspect. But then also on the other side, you look at the release cycle, like, they talked about publicly that they didn't initially intend on releasing the second core set last year, and that completely wrecked their release cycle. They had to push a bunch of stuff back many months and got stuff all out of order. They hit a production issue with a couple models one time that pushed it back like 8 months. And so even though you might want to be releasing the models that people say they want, it might be in some weird limbo with like IP rules or manufacturing issues or redesigns with artwork. There could be a lot of stuff that goes into when stuff comes out. And so obviously if they want to, they can push through a lot of that. But I think a lot of people just assume it's like, why is it my favorite thing out? And they just get mad. I get it. But I just keep in mind that there's a lot that can affect this stuff. Like, all kinds of things can. Like, but also just like the personal opinion of the people designing the game is going to matter a lot, obviously. Maybe they don't like the character that you like, and so they don't even consider it as like a popular choice.
I was never a huge fan of when they release models that were not a part of my comic book collection from the 90s.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, like,
I get that you're upset by that, right?
But yeah,
like, it's not a unanimous decision.
No. Mine's very personal and very, like, I'm invested in, like, Spider-Man stuff, X-Force stuff, X-Men stuff. Like, all of that stuff is very specific to, like, what I like about comic book characters.
Yeah. Like, nobody's complaining that we have four Spider-Men.
Exactly.
Like, I don't get it. Like, I understand Black Panther. I fucking hate Wakanda as, like, a concept. Like, but it's what it is. I don't think Black Panther's a terrible superhero. I think he's a terrible character.
And I'll also say, and I mentioned at the very beginning, that I am excited that Namor is in the game. He's a really big part of the Marvel Universe in a lot of ways. So if they are not ducking out of, you know, really important characters by taking Namor, I think that's really great. And so anybody who says, I hate this box, you're wrong. Namor is really important. He should be in this game. Absolutely.
Agreed. But also, I would argue that if for everyone's like, I want Fantastic Four, Namor is a step in that direction.
He is.
And so, like, if people sit down and, like, actually know the Marvel Universe, like, Namor leads to, like, more Inhuman stuff, can also lead to Doom and Galactus. And so, like, we might just be moving into that, like, separate realm. Because there's, like, the three big, like, standalone parts of, like, the Marvel Universe, if you ask me. There's the Mutants, there's the Avengers, and then there's the, like, Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. And they're all kind of like, they all interconnect, but there's like, those are like the pillars that everything is built off of.
Yep.
And so like all these cross connections, like they're starting to fill in all the gaps that lead to the other pillar. So, like, I don't know why people would freak out that Namor's coming.
Did you say Avengers, X-Men, and Fantastic Four? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, that you're correct.
Well, mutants, but yeah.
Yes.
Those are, like, the big three clusters of, like, IPs.
Yeah.
And then you could argue that, like, the mystical side is, like, in its own area, but...
Yeah.
Like, the Midnight Suns and all that.
Yeah, but that's very much a fourth leg.
Yeah, it's like a secondary. Tool. It's not in the forefront.
Yeah.
Anyway, do we have any other news?
That was the primary one.
Cool. Alrighty. Moving into currently playing, I still play no games because I am a lame person.
I'll go. I went to our tournament. We had a local tournament. It was a small show, but a lot of really awesome local players showed up. It was hard playing, actually. I really like that our local meta right now can play a real small tournament, and I can feel like my three games I got were quality games and with really awesome players, and so it was a blast. I brought the Avengers list that I made, the modern art. I talked about it two casts ago. It blends a lot of reroll tech on one side with martial artist list that I've been playing for a while, and I went through rounds. I won't go into every gritty detail, but I will say this is enough detail. I got to play 16 points and Mayor Fisk for three rounds in a row. I brought the same list three rounds in a row. I am just lucky. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't get that. I just happened to get it three rounds in a row. I didn't even get my blues three rounds in a row. It was just somebody else brought Mayor Fisk and we got it. I didn't get to pick the points three rounds in a row, but it happened. So
you won Pryo, got the mission you like, and the point total you like three rounds in a row?
No, that's what I'm saying. Oh, okay. I didn't get that. Sometimes they won Pryo, picked my blues, we flipped over, and I got to pick 16, right? So, like...
Oh, okay.
So, like,
you said you didn't get to pick 16.
No, I and twice they picked 16. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
I got you.
So I just ended up getting it three times. And so I played the same list three times, which was the best Avenger, Cable, Steve, Captain Steve, Zemo, and Black Panther. And that,
you're doing a reserve member, right?
Yeah, reserve member, Zemo. And it is just a really hard nut to crack. It's got all your martial artists. It's got just oodles of rerolls, just way too many rerolls. And even though it was four-manning it against five-man teams, both times, it just hit way too hard.
Fisk, Steve is really good about punching up one person.
Yeah. And also, it allowed me to keep priority all the time. As it turns out, Zemo and Black Panther are just too fast for people to run. So people, they wisely chose extracts sometimes, see if they could, you know, get up on extracts. And Black Panther and Zemo are just too fast. They just chase things down and kill them quick enough when they had to. If they didn't have a lot of extracts, because they were also playing a fighty list, I just turtled up with the four of them near one of the Fisks to make sure they could never score too many points every round. And I just killed them with really big sword swings and Black Panther turns. It's just Cable attack throws, nearly re-rolling all of his dice and throwing big stuff. Panther attack throws with re-rolling all of his dice and throwing himself. And then Zemo does, you know, two full re-rolled attacks with extra dice. It's just really efficient, really efficient dice and damage. So
cool.
That's how I took that one down. The only problem I'm seeing right now that I feel like this list so far, either it's really, really good into a lot of scenarios, or I've just gotten really lucky and only played the scenarios it likes. I feel like I need to keep playing the list a little bit to find a game that I didn't feel advantaged by specifically the scenario. So either I've just gotten really lucky with my test games, which is possible because I haven't played that many.
I would imagine your biggest weakness is probably, like, you know, high tempo steel teams.
Yeah. And I have played against one, but they didn't get the scenario they wanted. So it didn't work out for them. So like I've just gotten lucky every time I've come up to something that I was really nervous about. They just didn't get what they wanted. And so it didn't work out. But anyway.
So, Aaron, you went to a tournament in Omaha?
I did. There were five of us who traveled from Kansas City to Omaha for their LVO qualifier. And we, look at it real quick, we did well. We came in first, second, eighth, ninth, and 18th. I took Hellfire because I've been vocal saying that Hellfire, Webs, Wakanda are top of the meta. Got some pushback from a lot of people, and I was like, well, let's put my money where my mouth is. Let's either go win the tournament with Hellfire, or figure out where I'm wrong.
So when the rubber met the road, how'd it go?
There was lots of rubber left on the road. I ended up taking it down 4-0 with Hellfire.
Nice. Did you learn anything about the list that you didn't already know?
Nope.
Still as OP as you expected?
Yep. Were now, is it unbeatable? God, no. Right? It's all Marvel and dice, obviously, right? Not. It's not like show up, win, but it is right, show up advantaged.
So what I was wanting to ask was, did you play against anything that gave you an interesting game, or was it pretty much like, you know, old school Webs where it's like scripted? It's like, well, unless you can get me off my plan, I'm just going to win on turn three.
I can give a quick rundown. The first game was into Inhumans, which was very interesting because they're just going to roll dice, right? We're like, nope, we're going to do our power shenanigans. He was trying to pass power to Marvel 2. This was Josh from Muse. Great guy, great player. He ended up having so I was up 14-7 on turn 2. So turn 3, he activates Marvel 2, flips a point and dazes 3 characters. He just goes ham. Then I still have 2 extracts with Bill. Like, I just win the game. And he's like, well, I still have Toad and Quicksilver, so I guess I'll, shoot you with Toad, do a damage. In between the two of them, I was able to heal using Hellfire Leadership. Then he goes with Quicksilver and he does 1 rounds, Bill. Like, okay, or you could just do that. So I barely hung on to win the following turn, 17-15. And that game could have gone his way if dice had gone a little more in his favor early.
So sounds like Inhumans is the strong counter to Hellfire.
We're going to say Inhumans are a decent attrition team that could always win a game, and I would never bat an eye. After that, I played into Wakanda, and this was a little scary. It was Paranoia and Cosmic Invasion. He went 4 wide, and I think that was his mistake. I think he needed to go 5 wide at 16 to match my 5 wide, because I just had more bodies to pick stuff up and put on points. Although, this was Mike from Omaha, and he was very singularly focused with his Killmonger. Like, I figured he'd, like, try to hunt down my Rhino. He's like, nope, where's your Emma? Let's draw a bead, and I will move. I will charge toward the Toad. I thought he was charging Toad. Like, nope, just happened to be in the way. He did one-shot Toad. Good for him. Turn 2, charge Emma, kill Emma. Turn 3, usurp, kill Emma. I didn't get to use leadership turn 3 or after. In fact, on turn 3, I had 2 models KO'd. So after turn 3, I'm down 5-3 on models, but his singular focus on murdering my people just let me score it out. So, Then I played Kenny's Kingpin, and that's always interesting, right? Hellfire versus Kingpin. I won't get into the specifics, but I pulled it out. And then the final was a Hellfire Mirror. So I would say any one of those matches could have been lost. Inhumans, Wakanda, Criminals, or the Hellfire.
How many Hellfire clubs were there?
3.
Out of 16 players?
23. They had 26 and then 3 dropped, so.
Oof. So 26 starting, 3 Hellfires, 2 of them made the finals?
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, it depends on who's playing them, but that sounds pretty strong.
So I won't take anything, I won't overreact, one event, right? Yeah. It's one event, it's 23 players, but yes, 2 of the 3 Hellfires ended up placing. The third went 0-4, so, you know, grain of salt, man. A lot still has to come down to the players who are playing the teams, right?
Yeah. I have a question, Aaron.
Yeah.
You made the posit before, after the last tournament where you went unaffiliated with functionally Hellfire, just not Emma in the Hellfire Club card. Mm-hmm. And you said that you did not know how much Emma in the Hellfire Club card actually allowed you to win rather than just playing the same list without spending that 4 points of tactic slot. Now, having played it in a tournament, do you still feel that way, or is it actually just a coin flip? Sometimes it wins the game, sometimes it doesn't help.
I think Emma is definitely better than not.
Oh, okay. That surprises me. Tell me why.
Both the power and the healing, but mainly the healing on your people. You don't know how much, well, maybe you do. Everyone does. You can heal, let's say, 3 per turn, starting on turn 2, 3, and 4. So you're going to heal, let's call it 10-ish power off of your models. That can be significant. What if I had a tactics card that said heal 10? Yeah, I'd take that. And then as a benefit, I also gain 10 to 15 power through 4 turns. It's just really good. Emma is herself not a huge anchor. Like her ability to displace with her builder and the fact that it's mystic, which you usually want to at least have a mystic person in your team. So yeah, you might not always want to bring her, but she's definitely not a huge anchor. And yeah, that leadership is well worth a tactics card, in my opinion. There might be some situations where it would be probably equal to not bring her. You know, if you wanted to run wider at, say, 15 with a 3 and a different 4. But in general, I think you would always be competitively advantaged to play Emma versus run unaffiliated.
I have a question. When I've played against Hellfire, one of my basic, you know, strategies is kind of when you're fighting against a Sabretooth. I'm not going to attack one of these models unless I'm pretty confident I can kill them, at least this round, so that he's not getting, like you say, the benefit of, you know, 5 health off of that turn.
Mm-hmm.
I want one model to go down. If I want 2 models to go down, they need to go down. I need to be reasonably sure of that. Do you find that you actually get to have that much health over the course of the game? Is there a lot less than 15 over 3 turns, for example?
So realize that I hadn't touched Hellfire in months before I just randomly picked them up for the tournament. So I don't have like a, you know, weeks or months worth of testing with them. However, I would say you are normally over the course of a regular game, I'm going to say 7. I'm going to say you average 7 health healed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The problem is that health can sometimes be significant.
Right.
For instance, you know, I played against Toad where I leave him on 1 and all of a sudden by like turn 3, he's sitting only on 1 damage instead of 1 health remaining. And I'm like, motherfucker, didn't I like almost kill you before?
Mm-hmm. And he's got the power to like, you'll hop in and double acid spit you as opposed to not enough power.
Yeah. And all of a sudden he's not just hanging out in the corner of the board because he only has 1 health left. He's sitting here on 4 health. You're like, well, I probably aren't going to one-shot you now. So you're effectively immune with slippery. The power gain's also absolutely baller, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's making sure Bill always has 3 power so I can double move throw every turn under Hellfire. I mean, there's lots of reasons why it's not just the healing, but the combination of the healing and the power is really, really good.
So back when Emma first came out, I remember there's like 2 camps basically. And there was one that was, this leadership will eventually become broken. And the other one was like, she's absolutely terrible. And so, and the issue being that if they release enough individually strong models, this leadership will become a problem. And do you think we are there already? Do you think it is a fact, or it's a problem of Emma just amplifies the 5 best models in the game in whatever situation you happen to be in? Because you're basically just taking the 9 best models in the game plus Emma.
So you're not actually taking the 9 best models in the game because you need to have some certain synergies to do what you need to do. So like, I don't have Logan or X-23 in my list. Other people do. There are still a lot of different iterations of what Hellfire means.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just watch the game tonight where... you know, TTS cuts, Lucas put Nova in. Why did he put Nova in? Did he know his opponent was going to play Wakanda and it was good into Wakanda? Was he gamesmanship? Is that part of his Hellfire list because Nova does X for Hellfire? So I still think there's a lot of iteration to be had with Hellfire, and so there's not a standard list. So I think that makes it still fun and exciting.
Hmm.
I am not willing to say Hellfire is broken. Right, I think Hellfire is very good. I think it is one of the top 3 affiliations. I don't think the other ones are so far behind it that it's a problem. It's on my radar, but I don't know that I'm screaming nerf Hellfire. Mm-hmm. I'm whispering it in the back of my head. Mm-hmm. Because other affiliations get things. Right? So what does Hellfire get? Characters, period, dot. What does Cabal get? Dark Reign. Black Bifrost. Like, there's other stuff other affiliations get that helps make up for it.
I think it's less about nerfing Hellfire, more about the their specific problematic models in the game that are amplified by Hellfire, like we were talking about. Like, Rhino and Black Cat being, like, the way to start every list is just really hard to deal with when you can also have a leader that can play them in every list with anyone else you want. And so you're worrying about basically the 13 points of most efficient models in the game combined with leadership that just does anything, basically.
Yeah, I played the same six models basically every game. Emma, Rhino, Bill, Lizard, Cat, Toad. It's what I refer to as my menagerie.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically just spider foes with a better leader.
Not wrong.
And the I think the point you said, like, the characters are the benefit. When you say that list, I go, when I see any one of those, or maybe two of them, because you take one out of affiliation on your opponent's roster, and you go, okay, well, I'll make sure to deal with that threat. But when you put all of them down, your opponent goes, okay, I will not be able to deal with all of these. Some of these will be able to do their thing uncontested. And that's, I think, where the character bonus lies. Because if I'm standing down across from Hellfire, there's not one target that I need. I need all of them, and that's pretty hard to do.
Cool. Any closing thoughts?
I remain of the opinion that Hellfire's super, super good. That's it.
I played against it on game day. It felt and was, as I played against it at LVO and the other times, like, it's just kind of a miserable, boring game to play against. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I don't know how broken it is or whatever, but it's just a miserable slog. They steal your shit and they don't die. It's like, okay, that's cool, I guess. That's not very superhero-y.
It's definitely that. It's almost like a weird mash together of Web Warriors and Kingpin leadership. And so it's basically just, you know, you're just playing the most efficient way to play the game in from the aspect of I'm trying to win as quickly as possible. And so it feels a little bit like when you try and cheese video games where you're just like, you know, this isn't how the game was meant to be played, right? And you're like, yeah, but like it works, so I'm doing it this way. Like, and you're like corner peeking people and stuff. Like, that's what it feels like when you watch a Hellfire game. It's like this person is like a clear mathematical advantage, but is not really doing anything. And then the other side is like trying to actually play a game. And so that's, it looks horrific to me. Like, so I don't play it, but we'll see. See how it goes over the next few months. Alrighty. So moving on. We'll have a couple topics today. First of which, kind of just having an open conversation about the state of the meta. We talked about this a couple times already, but this hopefully we'll have a little bit of a different point here. Is after we've said on the last few weeks of podcasting what we thought about the meta, we've been getting a lot of feedback, dissenting opinions, alternate perspectives is probably a good way to call it, of people in different metas saying how they haven't experienced what we've been experiencing, or that their outlook on the meta is just completely different. And so I just thought it'd be interesting to talk about some of the different viewpoints people have had on the state of the game. Because obviously CGR has been like, you know, the Sauron eye in the meta for the last 6 months. So now that that has been vanquished for the time being, it's interesting. So like, I've heard one opinion today that was basically, we have to continue the campaign against Sauron because he's going to come back. like we have to keep worrying. Like, he's not gone yet, guys. We have to destroy the ring first. Like, and so that's kind of where some people are. So what have you guys experienced?
So the tournaments that I was at in Springfield right after he got CGR got taken out, it was very interesting because without that, you know, monster in the closet kind of thing, people were playing 3-point models and 4-point models and just kind of an assortment of things that normally Cosmic would just feed upon. And I don't know, I think it was a mixture of new players and, you know, people kind of like, you know, the rabbits not hiding anymore. But it made for a much more interesting game. But also, just like we discussed with Hellfire Club, like these lists are now going to start to really shine some of these things that were hiding because of the one predator. So I am afraid that it will slide into something bad and maybe even worse than it was. But it does seem for now that the game's in a pretty good state, but who knows in 6 months.
I had a really interesting conversation at the tournament with the Vrendenbergs, local guys. Shout out to them. And my first, I played Josh in my round one at the tournament, and he said something at the very beginning of our game. He said, "I don't know how much I'm going to enjoy this list that I'm playing, but I feel like I need to play Sam because I'm going to a big event. They're excited to go travel to an event. And so I feel like I really need to get good at this." And I go, "Okay, cool." And so afterward, you know, we played our game, and because I know the Sam Avenger list really well, I was able to pull it apart. And just 'cause I had so much experience into it. And after the game, I said, why are you excited to play Sam? He goes, "Oh, I'm not. And I'm not really that excited to play Sam. I just think it's got, you know, a really good chance. It might be one of the best lists left after CGR is gone." And I go, "Okay, I could see that. And, you know, what have you learned about it?" And so we talked a little bit about it. And some of the things that he was, you know, commenting on were absolutely accurate, and he was doing a great job of like noticing the way the meta has shifted. I was like, one of the things he said, he goes, "I feel like I can't play my Guardians list. I can't play Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, because CGR really isn't there anymore." And I thought about it for a second. I was like, Guardians actually has some really cool tools to deal with specifically a meta full of like extractors and three pointers and two pointers running around and stealing stuff. Because if Gamora and Angela don't have to worry about like really highly offensive models chasing them down and killing them, they can just run over those models and kill multiple ones at a turn, and they can't run away from them. They're too fast. But nobody thinks about Angela and Gamora in Guardians. They think about the Star-Lord, Rocket, Groot, and that's a terrible idea into an extract meta, right? And so I think, you know, and we just had a long conversation, and after he was done, I think he's still convinced he wants to do Sam, and that's fine. But I think one of the things that happens is when we hear the meta has shifted towards scenarios, everybody goes, "Okay, cool. Then I'll shift to scenarios too," which is fine. But what I want to do immediately is, "Oh, you mean everything's shifting to scenarios? Oh, cool. I'm pulling all these models that I didn't used to be able to play and the anti-scenario pieces out. And let's see how well they can kill the scenario lists, because I want to still kill them. So let's see if we can still destroy scenario lists, even though they're really, really good at surviving. Let me play some models that specifically are good at that, but aren't played because before they just lost to CGR. Angela and Gamora were really good examples of that. People don't play them because they didn't feel good in an attrition meta, but I think they'll feel great in a scenario meta." So I think being willing to expand what your favorite faction thinks is good, or what you've thought your favorite faction is capable of, is one way to still play the thing you love and the thing you're excited to play in a meta that changes. I don't think you have to just dump what you love because the meta has shifted. I think you'd actually get to play more things within that thing you love.
Yeah, I'll second that. I think that's what our episode was like 2 weeks ago, right? Like, what would you play if you didn't want to play quote-unquote meta? Like, what has game into it? And we went through a bunch of different options. So yeah, pick up one of those.
Yep.
If you want to know what the competitive meta is, I would say the week one of the TTS cuts that just happened should, you know, caveats, represent what people think are going to win the most games. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
I think I love your heavy emphasis on the word should, but yes. Yeah.
Okay. So there are, 24 affiliations?
I think it's 28.
Ooh, there's a lot.
Okay. Did you just forget about affiliations like AMG?
Yeah, affiliations, leaderships, they're all fucking useless to me.
I think there's like 58 leaderships or something like that.
There are 32 players in Top Cuts. 25 of them are represented by only 7 affiliations. I would call that pretty top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Those seven
more top heavy than LVO was, or WTC.
LVO might have been a little more actual top heavy, top three. But anyway, Okay, so let's see if you guys can guess. What are the seven affiliations that make up the choices?
What was the breakdown? You said 32 and 25?
There are 32 players.
25 of them are playing the top seven?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hellfire.
Correct.
Web Warriors.
Correct.
Jeremy.
Oh, we're doing that.
Well, I was giving you an opportunity before we take them all.
Gotcha. Criminals?
Correct.
I'll go with Defenders.
Correct.
I'll go with Cabal?
Nope.
Okay.
That was a bad guess.
Well, I think people like Cabal at the moment, but...
Yeah, I could see that.
Guardians.
Nope.
No!
Back to me, huh?
Oh, shit.
They're all scenario.
Midnight Suns?
They're all scenario.
Damn it. Then I'll say Inhumans?
What? No.
Don't they have a hardcore scenario?
Oh, Wakanda.
Thank you, Wakanda.
Of course.
Yeah, sorry, I blanked on Wakanda. I don't even count them.
I thought Inhumans had a really hardcore scenario play. I've seen it, but...
There is a scenario list you can build, but it is very one-dimensional.
Okay.
They're more X-Men. Known for attrition. Nope. Yeah. They're actually zero X-Men.
Ah! Jesus Christ, they died.
Oh, Brotherhood?
Yes.
People like Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. Like, the Mystique Brotherhood's really hot right now, running that scenario
jank. He's so hot right now.
Mm-hmm. And the last one is the second most played.
Ooh, we missed the second most played?
Might be surprising a little bit, but
yes. Is it Avengers again?
It is Avengers.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think Avengers would be that high.
It's come back around.
I didn't either.
Voodoo's back, and granted,
not everyone is playing the standard prototypical list. For instance, Simon's playing MODOK 2 Claw Cabal, or King, or Criminals, not Kingpin. But so you can do a lot with the various lists, but if I was to break them down, I would say the stronger scenario play is Wakanda, Avengers, Hellfire, Criminals, Brotherhood, Webs. And then the one quote-unquote pure attrition list in there is Defenders. Mm-hmm. So I kind of agree. Yeah, if I was going to take something to a tournament and try to win, unless I get really good at something else into one of those lists, which is absolutely possible, I think those would be top of the meta. So I think I concur with, for the most part, the top cuts.
Yeah. I think it's important also, like, to wrap this conversation up. I want to point out that, like Aaron said earlier, we're not saying that these affiliations automatically win or anything like that. It's just like we think they're currently advantaged. And I think part of understanding what advantaged means is maybe they're just really consistent, as opposed to like they're not, like they may not be over, like super overpowering, but they perform at a consistent level. And so anyone who's been to a tournament understands, like, if you need to win four rounds in a row and you're playing Dice Yahtzee, like, well, the odds of that happening four rounds in a row is pretty unlikely. As where if you have a team that's just very solid but performs well, that can take you to, like, a very high success rate. And that was, I kind of think, what the, like, cornerstone of the San Avengers list was, which is why it was so popular. It wasn't that it was just blowing people out. It was that it almost never had bad games. And so if you're a good pilot and you have good game knowledge, you can pilot a list that never lets you down to a very successful record. And so after that, it's just, you know, can you get the couple lucky games you need after that?
What?
And so I think it's important to remember that we're not just talking about, like, this just wins all the time. It's like, that's not necessarily the case.
No, but identifying a meta is just, what do people think will win? Therefore, if you're going to win a tournament, you should either play that and play it well, or know you're going to face it. So you should not sit down across from Hellfire and be like, oh, look at that. Emma, Cat, Rhino, Bill. Oh, I'm screwed. I don't have a plan into this, right? So just make a plan. Like, okay, here's how I'm going to dissect the traditional Wakanda/Hellfire list, right? And so all you have to do is have a plan into these lists. I guess that's my only takeaway.
Yeah.
They're not unbeatable. Just make sure you know you're going to face them. Just like when you were planning to face EGR, people were like, okay, let's bring in Carol 1, let's bring in Colossus, let's do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to start putting Indom in my list, right? And after people iterate, and it's still, you know, like getting hit with a dirty sock in the face 18 times, you know, AMG's finally like, okay, I guess we'll help you guys out and nerf this guy. So I'm kind of excited to see where people go to iterate into these lists that are, I think, dominant right now.
Cool.
Yeah, I think.
Alrighty.
There's I didn't hear. I think there's not just room. I think it's exciting whenever a meta turns. Anyone who is frustrated by the meta shifting to this way, I am the exact opposite. Because when I hear the meta is shifting, I go, ooh, opportunity. When the meta is stagnant, that's when I get frustrated, because I go, well, all of these recesses have been plumbed, right? We've seen all the corners of the room. We don't have much more to look at until something gets shaken up. But when we get a shakeup like this and the meta shifts at all, it's wide open territory, right? There's something to be explored. I think it's the opposite of solved. Whenever you get a big meta shift, it's quite the opposite. That's what excites me anyway.
Cool. Alrighty. So the next conversation is based off of last week's episode, which Parker knows nothing about, so he's not going to talk during this segment.
Unless it's about tree specific information.
Unless it's specifically about trees.
I can tell you all about trees. But
so Parker, I'll just tell you as if I was telling the audience. Last week we did a trash heap segment where we basically just started naming characters in the game. I just created a big list of characters. We started going down. I went through about 40 characters last week. And then in order, we would go across the line and we would say fine or plus or minus. And so fine means that we think it's within the acceptable bell curve of the game and doesn't need any changes, or theoretically we would move to a second edition, or however you want to look at it. It's like, this is a good for the game design point. And then if you say plus, that would be implying that if this waddle were designed today, they should change something about it to take something away. And then minus would mean that they need to add something to the model or redesign it in a way that would make it better for the game.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I'm with you.
So one of the contentious points we had last week was Strange One.
Mm.
And so you probably see where this conversation
is. I saw this on Discord.
I know we were of one mind on Strange One.
Yeah.
So me and Jeremy gave him a plus, and Aaron gave him a minus. Is one of the only times in the entire segment that we were away by two categories.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, obviously being wrong, decides not comment much more for the rest of the podcast. Oh, he's going to talk now?
No, I actually have a question for you, Brandon. You guys both gave him a plus. I'll listen to it so you don't have to tell me everything that happened. But you guys gave him a plus, meaning that you think he should actually be brought down to an average?
That's kind of what we're going to talk about now.
Okay.
Yes, that's what they said. Overpowered needs a nerf.
Okay. Saying
being a plus or a minus, I think we need to clarify that. I think it doesn't mean necessarily that the model needs to be nerfed or needs to be buffed. It's more about the mechanics of the model. And so as an example, let's see. Let me think of something. So let's say Rocket. Rocket's a good example here, I think. Rocket can be a plus and also not be bad for the game. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure how we actually define plus and minus.
Yeah, I was going to say. So
right. So it's an opinion, right? It's a subjective score. And so that's what it's designed to do, is to see where we differ on points. Because we get to a model and we're like, blah, 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 like, let's say Dormammu. Everyone says minus, we move on. And so that's just basically saying, like, this model is lacking what we would like to see for the bell curve of the game, or on the plus side. So Strange, like the way I look at it is I view models in, I have kind of like personal labels I put on them. And the label that I generally put on models that are need to be fucking corrected are what I call legacy models. And so if you look at a model and you go, this is a legacy form of design, and basically implying that if this was done today, they would never put these words on a card.
Mm.
Right? Like you just couldn't do it, right?
You're borrowing and this from TCGs, right?
Not necessarily. Like, legacy, not capital L legacy, just legacy in general. But as a Magic parallel, because a lot of people probably went there when I said legacy.
Yeah.
Let's go back and look at it. Like, if you go back and look at the earliest set of Magic Alpha, which had all the Power 9 in and everything, the game was not yet fully developed or refined. And so if you look at it, you've got, like, Flying Man, which is like a 3-cost creature that's a 1/1 flyer. Like, in the current day and age, they wouldn't even bother printing that piece of garbage. Like, they would never do it. But at the same time, there's a 1-mana card that draws you 3 cards. There's a 2-mana card that lets you take an additional turn after your current turn. Which, just imagine doing that in this game. It's like, oh, I just get to go back-to-back turns. Like, follow me. Yeah. But it only costs 2 power. And you're like, oh my fucking god, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Like, it'd be insane, right? And so those are the cards that we see get transitioned out of the game very quickly. All you've got, patch up, field dressing. All of these cards are like, okay, we're seeing that either they've completely stopped adding cards like them to the game, or we've straight up, like, scalpeled it out and gotten rid of it because it's like, that can't exist. Like, we don't know what we were thinking. It was an experiment. It's gone. Like, never happen again. And when I look at his card, that's all I see. Every bullet point on his card is like, that can't happen. Like, just clear your minds for a second. Everyone at home, clear your minds. Just imagine we're designing a new character from scratch. That character is going to be able to modify its skulls whenever it wants for any reason. Not just when doing one specific thing, for any reason. It gets a free combat reroll of all of its dice whenever it wants, on every combat roll. It has the ability to heal allies for 3 damage. It can omnidirectional push any size model. It can activate models, and it can automatically stagger models. We haven't even listed all of its abilities yet. What's the point total of the model we're talking about? Like, it's in, like, the fact that we're even discussing it as it's part of the game is insane to me. Like, there is no way that they would design this model today. Now, are we also in a space where this model is exploited and it abuses the meta? No, we're not. So he's not currently hurting the game. But there was a time when Strange was like the best model in the game. We just don't currently exist in that meta anymore. Does that make sense? Did any of my rant there do anything for you guys? Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that we have models that put check marks on other models as an attack that can just happen multiple turns in a row or twice per turn. Like, this is the kind of nerfs that we've been seeing lately. Like, CGR can no longer spender twice per turn because his spender is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, if you've ever been double spendered by Strange, it's the worst feeling ever. Like, it's like, oh, you just activated my 2 most expensive models? That's great. Like, fuck me. So yeah, when I say he's a plus model, it's that these game mechanics don't exist within the bell curve of the game. Not saying that he needs to be nerfed necessarily, but like, this can't happen ever again. Like, just like Cosmic Portal, even if you think Thanos currently is a fine model, I would rate him a plus because those rules cannot exist anymore. A model that can have 2 Infinity Stones, can place anyone, also has perfect damage reduction. Like, you can't print that model again. And I think the AMG has learned that lesson, and so that's why I would rate it a plus, because it doesn't exist within the bell curve.
I would also say, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would also say that one of the ways you're going to destroy this at the beginning is if they did a 2.0, would this model get touched? And I think he would, because of that reason. Yeah. I don't think it's
called like he'd be completely redesigned.
Right. I think, and it's because all of these things are things that now, if they brought him up, if they touched him at all, it would just break him. Right. So they have to make it worse.
Well, people also don't remember the days when he got to use the Time Stone. Like, so many people didn't play back then or just never experienced it. Strange with the Time Stone was maybe the most not okay model I've ever seen. Like, he was better than Thanos, in my opinion. That guy was a fucking monster. And we didn't even get to see him with all the leaderships and tactics cards that exist today, but we did get to see him with some silly stuff back then, too. So,
yeah, the fact that I don't see this guy enough, or as much as I do, I think that's more of a, like a group bias than it is an actual representation of the effects that he does.
I think, like, models like Peter Parker 1 are an exact perfect example as well. Everyone looks at Peter 1 and goes, oh, he's trash. And then they play against him and they go, how is this model part of the game and I've never seen it before? Like, it's just something like that. Like, it's where groupthink, I think, either was wrong or made a decision for a reason that people don't understand. And they just follow the decision and don't understand why they weren't playing that model.
I think for Strange, actually, it was a nerf. As soon as they nerfed Time Stone, I think people went, oh, nerf Time Stone. And then I think that was actually the big nail in the coffin for Strange.
I think that was part of it. But I really think it's just that the new age of 4 and 5 point models that people just assume he's not worth it anymore. And I don't think that's true at all. I think the Midnight Suns and Defenders are specifically in a really good spot to make a resurrection. And I think Strange can be a big part of that. Like, people, I don't think people realize how powerful being able to push a model twice a turn is. And then being able to also activate and stagger people whenever the fuck you want, basically. Like, in Midnight Suns, with bats available, it's like a 98% chance to be able to Crimson Band somebody. It's insane.
You could just put them in New Steve, and Crimson Bands doesn't become that mathematically hard.
Yeah, and then, like, I don't know how well he plays in the rest of the kit, but yeah, it would be really good. Being able to just add an extra hit makes his push even more consistent. Like, he's very good. And also, obviously, he gets to add defense dice to people, gets to heal people. He works really well with Steve 1.
Yeah,
he does. Don't know if Steve 3 is that much better.
But you're just giving Steve an example one is of
good enough.
Yeah. That's just one example that come to mind of people don't put him in with new leaders because I think they wrote him off, but there are things there.
And for people that got tired of Black Bifrost, like, he's literally got like the same tactics card. It's so good.
So, Aaron, why is he wrong?
Mm-hmm. When you're evaluating a character, I think you need to take a look at the totality of that character, right? So he has some things which are super good, but you're going to put it on a chassis that just dies, and it doesn't fucking matter how good his attacks are if he's not alive to use them.
Why does he just die? What is about him that isn't defensive?
His 12 total health on a 3-4-4 stat line is less than great for a 5 threat. It's okay. But knowing that you are playing Strange, I'm just going to attack you with physical attacks as often as I can to get you off the board.
Sure. No, I expect that to be the case.
Eye of Agamotto is nowhere near as good as it looks on paper, because I don't know how many times you actually choose to reroll your dice. Often not, or there's definitely a chance you reroll into a worse result, especially on defense. Like, sure. So clearly, if I don't get my attacks through your defense, it's an auto reroll. If I block zero, I reroll. I would argue that those times are not. There's definitely
understanding the math behind the rerolls. Yeah. And it's clearly not as good as reroll any, but it is still very good.
I'll say it's good. I don't think it's very good. I was misled in my mind as to how good Eye of Agamotto was going to be. And when I played Strange, I was very let down by that ability.
Okay. I think
he's on a zero action economy chassis.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the balancing factor of his kit.
Sure. So like I said, you have to take a look at the entire character and be like, is this character going to fulfill a role in this squad / roster? I will agree that I think he is more maligned by the community than he deserves, but I do not view him as a plus model.
Okay.
I was actually going to say, in the few times I've played him, because you guys, he left a real sour taste in my mouth because you guys just raffle stomped me with him back when he had Timestone. And so I kind of swore off of him. As much as I love Doctor Strange, I just skipped right over him for Sexy Strange with my affection. And played him. But the times I have played him, perhaps I was utilizing him poorly, but he did not perform very well at all. And I think it's probably because the lack of action efficiency, and maybe he has a big wide bag of tricks, and you kind of want him to do several things, different things, and because he doesn't have one clear role, or maybe you'd have to design one clear role for him to feel like you were worth it. But he looks like a generalist, but he actually is not that much of a generalist. He specifically does certain things. He's a toolbox, right?
Well, isn't a toolbox a generalist?
Kind of, but I think he is a toolbox, but he's not ubiquitous, right?
Yeah, he doesn't do everything.
Right. So he doesn't solve all the problems, but he is close to a toolbox, I guess.
I think he has more answers than the vast majority of models in the game. I'm not even sure who, like, maybe you could say Thanos is like a true does everything character, but I don't know if anybody else is.
So if you want my honest thoughts, which of course you do, I think he was probably better in a game where I'm going to steal from Rogue Agent's podcast and say Time to Kill was longer. So they have a concept, Time to Kill, which is how long, like, you put a model on the midline, does it take one activation to kill him? 5 activations? 3 turns? the game has gotten killier, right? So models can, you know, slide, push, spender, throw terrain. Like, you know, Rhino can just, you know, delete a 3 or a 4 threat if he's got 6 power. He could also do 0 damage, but the possibilities there and models are pretty killy. Strange, his kit works, I think, a lot better in a meta that isn't as killy, because then he doesn't go down quite as easily. He's gaining power by rolling defense dice more often to be able to boost his defense or use his attacks. Mm-hmm. He is definitely I'll call it a toolbox model, a support model, as much as you can be a support model in this game. If you look at his attack suite, 5 and 6 dice is horrible for a 5 threat, especially for the cost on that Crimson Band. I understand it's stagger. Again, that goes back to him being a controller as opposed to a damage dealer. So yeah. He doesn't quite have the defenses to live up to today's meta. And he definitely doesn't have the offense to contribute to today's meta. So he really has to live in that support role. And I just don't know that that's what people are reaching for.
No, I don't think you're wrong with a lot of those opinions. I don't think he's particularly a strong meta choice at the moment, but I think the meta is definitely moving in a direction that is closer to that. So I think the reason that so many people have a bad opinion of this model is that he is very difficult to play well, I think. Like, obviously, if you're, you know, punching down and, like, people don't know how to play against him, that obviously makes it a lot easier. But if people actually understand the situations, like, he is a 5-threat model. He is probably on the lower end of defensive for 5-pointers. He's much better in a prolonged engagement as opposed to, like, an alpha strike type scenario. But because of that, because he doesn't have action economy specifically, people will make a small mistake or bad decision to put him in a slightly too aggressive positioning and then get him killed very quickly. Because your opponent is incentivized to kill him because he is both expensive and good. So I think that's a lot of the reason people have a bad taste on him. Like Parker, I know Jeremy, I watched Jeremy try and play Strange probably 6 to 10 games and just get infinitely frustrated because A, he kept playing him into me and I knew how to kill him. And then B, he would just like not get maximum efficiency out of him. And so he's definitely not a model that's easy to just put on the table and succeed with. And so I think that's probably why a lot of people have a bad feeling about him. But yeah, you do have to be very careful to not put him in precarious situations. He has high range, and so you can take advantage of that. But yeah, you do need to be careful.
What you guys both just said, Aaron, both of you, I think were very clairvoyant and articulate, and you really hit the nail on the head. And I think the word that describes him, that the reason why I'm turned off to him specifically, is he is a very low tempo play. Like, he does not get started early. He does not help you early. Like, it might not be till turn 3 or 4 that he's really taking over a game. And even then, maybe not. So he is a very low tempo play. And I do not... tempo is, like, all I want. So that's probably why I struggle with him. He's not the wrong choice, but he is a low tempo play. So that's probably why I don't appreciate him.
Yeah.
See, I find it's almost... kind of the opposite of that. Most games that I was using him, especially with Midnight Suns, he would slow the shit out of your opponent's tempo. Like, like all of a sudden, they're not getting that middle point anymore, and you are. Like, and there's nothing that could stop you. Like,
especially in Suns, I actually think he's a good tempo piece because his range 4 plus his medium base, medium move, and bumping on a medium base, he can get to a lot of places on the first turn and then like take a shot, drag somebody in. And there's lots of situations where you could even like just bump forward and shoot somebody without even taking a move action. And all of a sudden you get 2 decent rolls and you've drug somebody into almost your deployment zone. Like he can have a lot of potential, but that's mostly a Midnight Suns or other people that can move him. Mm-hmm. So it's not a standard, but yeah, being a control piece, he obviously has counter tempo. So, like, he does affect tempo, but Parker's right. He's not personally a tempo piece. Mm-hmm. As far as the damage output, I kind of disagree. I know he's not a premier damage-dealing 5-pointer, but with the ability to reroll, I think people underestimate how many times just yachting an attack roll can actually help you a lot. Like, a lot of my attack rolls, like, you know, you just have them. Like, even if you have 6 dice attacks, sometimes they just shit the bed. and having the ability to just try again is so good. Like, it's not as good as having, like, you know, probably a Black Bolt attack suite, obviously, but it's up there.
Okay, I'll buy that critique.
Not to mention how many times you can get, like, one hit, one crit, re-roll the six dice and get, like, four hits on six. And it's like, it happens a fair amount. It's not obviously super consistent, but he is a more consistent damage dealer than most five-pointers. But yeah, so I just wanted to basically take some time and talk about why we said what we said. And I think, I don't think we were trying to say he's the strongest five-point model in the game, but I just wanted to say that he, his design space is still very much from, like, the archaic old format, where we have stuff like Zemo and Steve 1, and, like, not, maybe the pieces aren't the strongest pieces in the game, but they have individual effects on their cards that are so potent that they define entire affiliations. Like, for the longest time, Steve has defined what the game can be with his leadership. And the same way with Zemo, he has defined what a three-pointer can be. If anybody ever comes out that's better than Zemo, it's like, we better fucking pump the brakes, guys. Like, this was already the cutting edge of game design, like, as far as pushing the envelope. Like, this, and he's probably already still too good. And so it's like, it's just interesting going back and looking at it, because in the earliest aspects of game design for any game, you're generally going to push the envelope more than you will after you have more repetitions. So you end up with a lot more, like, paragons of one aspect. Like, Peter 1 is, I think, still the best controller in the entire game. If you give that guy 10 power, he can move the planet. But at the same time, he's bad at almost everything else. And so it's like, that's all he does. And same thing with Steve. There probably can't be a leader that supports his team better than Steve 1. It can't happen, because it would break the game. Mm-hmm. Zemo, you can have a more efficient three-pointer than Zemo, like, because it would just break the game.
There's so many models out now that I think there's a very good chance that most people playing, most people playing the game have never even tried original.
Yeah. I actually think that's why Ant-Man isn't popular, is because so few people like Ant-Man that nobody buys him. So most metas have never seen him on the table. Not once. And so that's the only reason I think he doesn't get played. Because that guy is so fucking good.
He is really dumb in Defenders. Like, real dumb.
Whatever. He doesn't have to be in anything. He's just really good. Obviously, he takes advantage of a lot of leaderships. But Defenders is a great one. You know which leadership he doesn't take advantage of?
Steve.
Steve. It's a fucking... That's why he didn't get played for a long time. Is because he can't even use his own leadership.
Anyway. Yeah.
Well, I think that's probably going to wrap it up for us today, guys. I hope you guys had a good time. And this has been Brandon.
And Parker.
And Jeremy.
And Aaron.
And you've just listened to The Gang Walks to Siberia.
So what are we going to call this thing?
I got it. Okay. Incredible, new, fantastic, astonishing, mighty, original, uncanny, sensational podcast.
I'm just going to put down Infamous.
And we are back.
I'm not going to lie, I'm a little nervous for my clap performance this time. I feel like the second clap was way off, and I don't know how that
make blue pills for
the
that.
Result.
The second, okay, I don't know. Aaron, can you explain it to him? I've said it so many times now, I don't even know if he can hear me.
It's hard. I stopped. Just stop.
The third clap is the one that matters.
Got it.
The first two are just for pacing.
Okay.
God damn it.
Well, my third clap was... spot on, because okay. The second clap was off. I really honed in on it.
Yeah,
I think your strategy of three claps is the correct strategy, I guess.
It normally is good. The only times it doesn't work is what I like to refer to as pulling a Jeremy.
Why?
I don't know about that. I have taken that? Your...
I want to know what Aaron's saying.
I want to say, your third claps matter is the only one that matters. I've taken it to heart. It's part
so
of my
don't
sex
clap
life
the
now.
First two times?
Well, no. Oh, okay. So I tell my wife, it's only Sunday sex that matters. Like, oh, okay. Wednesday and Friday, They can be okay performances, but we only grade this Sunday.
I heard you relate sex to clapping, and I had a lot of mental images that I really don't want, so I'm glad that we got off that.
Yeah.
Oh, you should stay there then.
Also, if you're like saving up for the third day, I don't know how I could do that. Like, in terms of, like, I guess I can go longer, but Jesus, like, I'd be shooting smoke at that point, I feel like.
Yeah. No, I definitely have the sieve mentality when it comes to sex. It's like I go until I have nothing left. I am like a ruptured balloon.
Good. I'm glad we didn't let that one lie. I'm glad we didn't let that joke just
today.
Yeah, I'm glad we did not just let that one go. Whew. We held
much
that one
like
up.
Sunday Six. We're giving her A+ performance.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, yeah. We're really looking around that whole glass, really seeing exactly what it looks like. I like that a lot. That's good.
On the subject, I do have to give gaming a kudos.
Gaming,
yes, gaming in general. So,
gaming.
For the first time in, I don't know, 30-ish years, I'm on a sex schedule, like for real.
Mm-hmm. Because you're gone so often.
Yes. Like, I'm gaming now Mondays, I'm podcasting twice on Wednesdays, Thursdays I'm gaming, and I'm usually gone some combination of Friday and Saturday.
Yeah,
that leaves Sunday and Tuesday, period, dot. And it was just getting awkward, and we're like, you know what? What if Tuesday night is just always sex night? It's been a fabulous 2 months so far this year. What can I say? There's some stability, expectations are always met. Like, you never have to wonder, like, do couples do this regularly? Because it's a fantastic idea.
I think they call it First Fridays, like first Friday every month.
Oh, first Fridays? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not a sex therapist, but maybe it seemed more than First Fridays.
I agree. So I'm just picturing Aaron's date book, and it's just like busy, 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 busy breakfast, busy, busy, busy brunch. It's just like, get out of bed. That's like option 8.
Not wrong.
All right. I had something I want to talk about. I have some announcements. I better actually type it or I'll fucking forget.
So I broke down at work. I've been leaving the other. I've been leaving the other building alone. I am only running my building, but I was watching them destroy themselves, and I finally broke down and had to stop them from doing some of the dumbest shit. So one of these
you can only watch somebody dip their hand in boiling water so many times before you can please stop doing that.
So they have this cooler unit that's like a sandwich thing. It's a sandwich cooler. It looks like what you see at Subway or whatever. It's got a top that kind of opens and closes. It's like 2 feet wide. So on their line is made up of this giant stainless steel table / line. I mean, the thing is probably, 15 feet long. And the whole thing is connected and made into one piece, essentially. It's all welded together.
Yeah, it's like one of those Subway, sandwich
it's
making table things.
Giant. Yeah. It's got a line. Yeah. It's got several layers. Anyway, it's all together. So about a year ago, it was going out in this cooler thing. And they're like, it's going out. We need to replace it. I'm like, whatever. I wasn't over there. I just heard they're replacing it. So what?
By the way,
yes,
those are not cheap.
Well, the thing is that thing is like $2,500. They're not bad. Yeah.
That's way cheaper than I expected.
Yeah. So they couldn't find one. It kept getting canceled, the order and all kinds of shit, because COVID ordering giant equipment is a fucking nightmare still. So I got involved in the just ordering it. I found the one we wanted. We ordered it, whatever. It appeared. So it appeared like 6 months ago. So ever since it appeared, they actually looked at where it goes. And to put it in, turns out it doesn't just slide out. It's all one piece of stainless steel.
Oh, Jesus.
So the maintenance guy has been saying out loud at our operation meetings every week, I just can't find anybody to stainless steel cut and weld it back in and all this shit. And I'm like, dude, I'm not going to say anything. Just let it fucking go. You already bought the table. It's not my business. Keep saying it. It's been 6 months. today he was like, he got yelled at by my boss. You need to just have it done. I want it done this week, blah, blah, blah. He's like, fine, I'll get it done. I'll get this company that charges way too much to do it. So I broke down and I'm like, oh my God, boss, let me show you what the fuck all this is about before mm-hmm. we go spending $5,000 to put a $2,500 piece of equipment in when we mm-hmm. don't even need it because the equipment works. So I walk back there. You essentially have to cut this fucking thing apart into two giant pieces to install what's the equivalent of a refrigerator with a top on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were getting ready to spend the money to do that. And I'm pointing it out, showing, and she's like, oh my God. I'm like, dude, why did you even do? Okay, I go, so leave it alone. It doesn't work. Take the $2,500 loss that we bought this piece of equipment, put the equipment on the wall, let the prep people use it, be done with this goddamn project. And they're like, yeah, we're going to do that. This has been going on for a year and a half. And I just, I didn't say anything. I swear to God, I just, some of these people just need to be put to sleep or something. Nobody knows how to pull the trigger or fucking make decisions. It just makes me insane.
Is it just like confrontation? They're so scared of the confrontation, they won't do it. Or is it, they're not going down to put their boots in the ground and see the actual problem? Or is it just problem solving? In my experience,
it's usually you basically have people in positions that don't have expertise in what they're doing, and they don't communicate what is going on well to the people above them. And so they kind of just keep pushing the stuff out to the side because they don't really know what they're doing. And so, like, shit usually in that kind of environment when you don't have, like, a direct overseer that knows what's going on, it usually just becomes a shit show over time.
It was a lot of them that kind of had an idea of an end goal, but nobody mm-hmm. was asking questions and saying, why are we doing this? They said, well, the cooler's going out. What does it cost to fix the cooler? Like $2,000. We get a brand new one for $2,500. Okay, let's order it.
Yeah.
They didn't understand what that even fucking meant. Okay, yeah. So then what are you doing? Then what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And for me, like, I get stuck in the whys before I even do anything. Like, yeah. I don't let mm-hmm. any shit like that ever happen.
It's a perfect example of the difference between a decision and an informed decision. Like, if you give somebody half the information they need to make a proper decision, they're going to make the wrong one. Mm-hmm. And then you're just going to have shit show after shit show because you're just continuing to make bad decisions on the same information.
Ah.
And then, like Jeremy said, you take a sensible person to the situation, show it to them, they go, what the fuck are we doing? It's like, well, it turns out what you wanted. Like,
yep.
But it's like, they just don't know what's going on, and they're not getting told the important information. Not like, they're probably getting correct information. It's just not the important stuff.
I can't believe I'm saying this to Brandon Shirley, but I think you're giving people too much credit.
No, the thing is, though, because the fault in this whole situation is the people. Mm-hmm. Is the person directly in charge of fixing the problem didn't know enough about the problem or how to fix it to give the person with decision-making power the correct information.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I don't know if that's we might be saying the same thing, but
maybe
usually.
Well, I'm just saying that the fault is the person's.
Yeah.
And I think you're saying I'm giving them too much credit because I think your logic is that it's the simplest explanation thing or it's easier to find faults in. Go ahead and say what you're
going to say. No, I was going to say, I guess what I was going to say is that sometimes when I'm working with children all day long, I say children, they're 14, right? So I'm working with 14-year-olds and I show them a problem that's so clear and the solution is so obvious and they go, okay, and they just kind of push their face into it, like they think the solution will just be, I'll just kind of push it. And you're like, no, you have to like think around the problem. You have to think non-linearly. Maybe wonder what you don't know yet. Like, have you considered thinking this? And they go, and they look at you like you are speaking Swahili. And I don't think, you know, we also often point at that prefrontal cortex thing. You know, they're too young to start to get it. But I know my brother, who's teaching, you know, seniors in high school, is having exactly the same kind of things. I don't think people practice that kind of shit. Like, I don't think that's what people do unless they're caught in a specific situation in which they're forced to practice it constantly.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think the vast majority of people are not put into situations where they need to have creative problem solving.
Yeah.
Be a regular skill that they learn and advance at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, kind of sad because that's like half of what I do, and it's like really what I love doing is creative problem solving.
Right. I think most people don't practice that at all. They just kind of what you guys are describing. They see the problem. They kind of go, oh, this is a problem. And they tell somebody else, hey, this is a problem. And you're like,
yeah,
can you do anything to assist and solve it? They go, well, it's a problem. You're like, whoa, what? And that is every kid that comes up to me and says, I have a bad grade. And I go, yeah.
Yeah.
they go,
that's a statement, not a question.
I have a bad grade. And I go, and like, it's the same kind of thing, right? And I have to teach my students all the time. When I won't let, you know, we have a study hall hour and kids can go between teachers and classrooms to get to talk to other adults. And I won't let someone leave my classroom until they tell me what they're going to tell the adult when they get there. And
just have people wandering over and going, I have a bad grade.
I have a bad grade. And I say, you have a bad grade in science. They go, yeah, but when you go to science classroom, what are you going to say to the adult? And they go, I go, okay, what grade is low? Let's find out right now. Like, which assignment is it? I was like, and you'll say, okay, I have a bad, and this is what you'll say. I have a bad grade on this test. Is it possible for me to fix it? And I go, and they go, okay, no, you don't get to leave until you tell me that back. Say what I just said. I will literally in front of them, like have them practice the concept of talking to an adult to solve a problem together. Because if I don't do that, no one does. Like they don't have somebody to help them do that. So that's probably the most
important thing he'll learn that week.
Probably, yeah. But that is the kind of thing that ends up adults with those same kind of issues, and we like to blame it on the youth. But I think it's just something you have to do or not.
Yeah. I mean, you call it cynicism, but I think the problem is that, like, all right, everything's done for you at this point, and if you just state that you have a problem, you can just kind of wait for somebody else to fix it. The society we live in most of the time, but the best versions of creative problem solving are always born in necessity. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you have like your radiator blows on the side of the road, right? It's like you can't just hold your hand up and say, somebody come fix this if you're in the middle of nowhere. It's like you're going to wait hours for a tow truck. It's like, or you could, you know, get into the back of your car, get your toolbox, like find some tape and like an empty, like a half empty water bottle, put some more liquid in your radiator, tape up your hose and try and get to a gas station. Like, mm-hmm. like there's different options you have as opposed to just sitting there waiting for somebody else to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the best ways to do that are just put people in weird spots, which kind of happens in life, right? Mm-hmm.
In this case, it means that people are going to get fucking fired. Like, I was watching a 2,500 problem all of a sudden
turn into a $10,000 waste of money.
And I'm telling, like, that guy was going to get himself fired. Other people are going to get themselves fired for not paying attention. Like, it was the most epic, stupid bullshit ever. It just,
typical, not my problem, and I don't want to deal with it syndrome.
Yep. For sure.
And then people wonder why they don't get promoted to, like, supervisor when, like, they just do what they're told and have zero accountability. It's like, yeah, I wonder why you're not selected to be a team leader.
Yeah.
I want you to know, there's something I really wanted to bring to the podcast. It's more information about my favorite tree. I found out more.
Oh, Jesus.
And
do we have that kind of time tonight?
Since our listeners are all about those tree factoids, I have an important update I learned.
I'm riveted.
The internet knows I care about trees. And so it sent me this factoid. The Osage orange tree, also called the hedge tree, my favorite tree. We've talked about this. Well-established canon at this point. I found out that the only reason why the Osage orange tree is still prolific like it is actually people, which I thought was fascinating. The big hedge apples, which they make, which we all agree are kind of obnoxious fruit, they are fruit, aren't edible or eaten by any creature yet still in North America. But at the end of the last ice age, about 30,000 years ago, they were. Large animals like the giant sloths and the rhinos and the mastodons, they would eat them. But once those animals all died off at the end of the last ice age, the Osage orange trees didn't have ways to proliferate anymore. They couldn't spread their seeds wide. And so the only places they exist were in Oklahoma, southern Kansas, and Arkansas, very small range. But when, as people were moving west, frontiersmen started to find them, they're like, wow, these are really easy to plant because they just make oodles of fruit. They have the pesticide properties, so we could use them for that. And if you plant them really close together, animals can't go through them. It's a natural fence, so you don't have to constantly upkeep expensive wire fences and rock fences and wooden fences. And so the reason why they are so widespread now is because people planting them all over the Midwest as they needed windbreaks and a natural fence. So there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're saying they should plant some in Siberia where they're going to let all the mammoths go?
Yeah, they could do that. And the mammoths would love them, apparently.
Are you guys aware that we're Jurassic Parking mammoths?
Are we? I would take one.
Yeah, it's happening right now.
Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
It's been apparently like a 10 or 15 year project that should be like resolving in the next couple of years. Uh-huh. But they basically got, because they have mammoth tusks, like they're not even that rare. Like there's millions of them in the higher North Americas, like Alaska. Yeah. You can find thousands of them just in like a 10 acre area. But they basically, so they bore into the old mammoth tusks that aren't fossilized yet.
Nope.
And they have full mammoth genome. And so they use that, they create an embryo based on the DNA of the mammoths, and then they're artificially inseminating West African elephants that are the most similar biological relative to the mammoths, and they just carry it to term and then give birth to a live mammoth that is 100% mammoth DNA after, I think it's like 24 months. And so their plan is to release about 10,000 mammoths into Siberia. And then the research study is actually not about that, but it's about what the effect of super fauna will have on the flora of the region, because they naturally will tear down, or at least it's theorized that they will naturally tear down like shrubbery and stuff and reveal more land, which will actually cause a heating effect. But anyway, that's what I know about it.
All I know is I've seen a movie that shows exactly what happens when you start doing this. And
yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
I'm pretty positive about it. I think this could work. I love it.
Yeah.
I want my children to know what it is like to ride a mammoth.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm all for it.
Oh, to hunt them. To hunt them.
No, I want to know what mammoth tastes like. that needs to be a thing before
can
I die.
Can we hunt them back to extinction? Humans can take animals from extinction.
I mean,
now,
honestly,
back
what,
to extinction again.
The actual ramifications of that are interesting, because what happens when you can actually just reinvent a species? Like we can like reintroduce it to the wild? Because I think it's actually happened before. Mammoths would just be the oldest one that we would have done it to. Parker, am I right on that? That's happened before, right?
Reintroduce an extinct species?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't recall that ever happening before. We have absolutely cloned animals, but I don't know. No, we found extinct species before that we thought were gone but weren't. That's happened a bunch of times. But usually it's because we found them, then we bred them on purpose because we're like, oh crap, this is a very tiny population that we didn't know was still around.
Okay, yeah. I think you're right. Yeah, I just Googled it, and it says no species have yet been revived and been deemed unextinct due to human intervention, but that we have found, like, we were wrong in the first place kind of stuff.
Right.
Like Bigfoot?
No.
Like Loch Ness Monster?
Yes.
Perfect. Or Nessie?
I was blown away, because when I was studying paleontology at the, I was talking to some of the professors there, and one of them one day, I didn't dare ever ask really dumb questions. One of them said, "So do you want to know about Jurassic Park?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Would you like to know if it could happen?" Everybody always asks eventually. I just assume no. He goes, "Actually, yeah, like we could." And I was like, "Well, what do you mean? Well, why haven't we ever tried?" He's like, "Because DNA, which is a physical molecule, right, that we could observe, like with our own electron microscopes and stuff, we can see dinosaur DNA with the scanning electron microscopes, and we have. But over time, the polypeptides that make up the structure of DNA warp and change." He said, "Think of it kind of like it's that kind of like desiccation. It's not, because there's not actually water molecules in DNA, but it's kind of like desiccation, because the DNA will wrap on each other and bind on each other so tightly. It's I guess the analogy would be like, if you ever take like a big chain and like it gets wrapped on itself and it binds super tight and you're like, ah, shit, like how do I get this? Because everything looks the same and it's infinite and it's infinitely tight and you can't just pull it free because it's so strong and it's bind. That's what it's like. Just imagine a chain hundreds and hundreds of miles long bound on itself, microscopically small. We don't have.
And you need to basically take a perfect picture of it.
Yeah. What we have to do is unbind that extremely tightly bound DNA in order to read it at all. And because right now it's completely unreadable. It would be like trying to pull something out of a giant chain link. You can't do it.
But what if it was like sealed in amber? So it was perfectly preserved.
We have that. We don't even need that. He's like that. He's like, he said, that's funny. He's like that part.
That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. That part of the movie doesn't actually mean anything. Like you can actually look in, like we found other kinds of just around fossilized remains. You can find DNA samples. They're just impossible to read with our current technology. We'd have to find a way to molecularly unwind a DNA strand, which is so difficult.
Currently beyond us.
Yeah.
So I have a question based on the mammoths, because you would know the most about this. Mm. Would it be possible for the mammoths to survive walking over like the Arctic Circle to North America if they released them in Siberia? No, they couldn't survive the trip.
Nope.
Why not?
It's way too far. Like the water. Yeah, the Arctic ice does descend down to, I think, the tip of Russia for certain times of the year. But I don't think it's enough time for them to cross, nor would they have anything to eat or drink on their way across.
Because it's just a desert.
Okay. Yeah, it's functionally just a giant desert of snow. So it would be too much.
What if they resorted to cannibalism?
No.
Why not? If one they mammoth are, were to eat the other mammoth and get the strength.
Yeah, like, so say you get 1,000 mammoths, mm-hmm. start the walk.
Right.
Well, what's the distance like laterally from Siberia to Canada? I can't imagine it's more than like, I don't know, 20,000 miles. we're shotgunning here, right?
Yeah. So
20,000 miles divided by 5 miles an hour.
It's such a dumb idea.
So they need to walk for 4,000 hours divided by 24. Well, let's go by divided by 12.
This is so terrible.
That actually only takes them a year. It's so over the like. Let's say like it's so it's possible.
No, it's
like
if not.
They just devour no, it's not. One mammoth a day, like probably grow like 5 yeah. to start, but it'll like shrink over time.
If it so took,
if they don't, they devour like 3% of their population a day.
I'm gonna like, look back to the fact here. That you just picked 20,000 miles to cross the Arctic Circle.
How far is it? It's not even that far. Like I no, overshot it's
not
it.
That far. Yeah, but
yeah, I know.
Even if it took a year, then the seasons would change and the ice would melt, and it would prevent them from actually completing the trip. So it's not
right. But you're assuming they can't cross, like, because you know, just imagine it like it's a big pancake, right, sitting on top of the globe, and so like as it expands for the winter, right, and it gets to Siberia, they would only need to get to the point where it would maintain frozen in the time period that it would be frozen.
No,
I think it's possible. I think Parker's trying to stop the mammoths, and he doesn't understand. This is how Jurassic Park happens, is that you don't do the math. It's like they release the fucking giant crocodile in Jurassic World. I'm like, are you fucking idiot? That thing can swim. How are you going to keep it on the island? Like, you fucking idiot.
Okay, so I'm looking at it, and it's saying here that...
It's extremely possible?
No, that Arctic ice no longer... constantly touches in a way that you can walk across. The ice breaks off and slides in towards land, but it's not like a single mass anymore between that covers the entire ocean, which
are we saying they can't swim?
They should be able to swim.
Yeah, polar bears can swim.
They could swim. They should be able to swim. I don't know how well.
I cannot wait for the next horror movie that comes out in like 10 years. It's just going to be like, there's this little guy on like a northern fishing boat, and like this drenched angry mammoth pops up out of the water like a hippo and just rams its tusks through the side of his boat. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me?
I was assured by Parker that this could never happen.
Never happen.
Infamous lied to me.
Anyway, mammoths.
Okay, I'm looking at it here. This is maps from from the winter of 2020, and
fake news.
And yes, they could, if they could do it fast enough, they could walk from Russia to Alaska, but they have to walk over the Arctic Circle, which is really difficult to do.
Why is it difficult? They got natural snowshoes.
Insanely, insanely cold. And it's a giant desert of ice.
They've been known to run up to 47 miles per hour.
Really?
Yes. That, well, what you didn't know is this strain of DNA was part cheetah.
Thanks, Miss Minutes.
That's two callbacks. That was two callbacks in one. I like that.
Isn't that awesome?
Two animated sci-fi campy characters.
Kind of quality from this podcast. All
right. Now I've established that Parker knows no shit about science. We can move on.
Yeah.
Don't know shit about fuck.
All right, you guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
So ready.
Hell yeah.
Sorry, Parker. I didn't realize we would talk about Strange One for so long. That's going to have you do a comic corner.
I did you see I responded? I saw it.
I did. Thank you. All righty. So, just taking a head count here. Aaron, are you abstaining from the Mojo World?
Oh, I will give you my one, and you'll like it.
All right, that's fine. I'll put it up there. I don't know if we'll add it to the vote, since you only have one. That'd be weird, but I'll add it to suggestions. Jeremy, do you have enough to do a full draft?
I'll try. We'll see.
Okay.
I am quite confident of mine that I'll have enough.
Oh, yeah?
So confident.
All right, so Parker has to go last because he wasn't here last week. Aaron gets to go first. That'll be fun. This is Nigel's favorite part of the podcast when I just type endlessly into the ether.
It's so loud.
It's so loud.
I can't believe you found an old mechanical typewriter to use.
I know. It took me weeks to figure out how to wire it up for like digital input. Mm-hmm. It's basically just a lot of little pressure pads. All right. So this week on Mojo World, we've got web series. So for this one, I wanted to basically pay homage to all those indie videos that get made by groups that never, ever get seen by anybody. And so a lot of these are cult favorites. Basically this category will take in anything that was not released by a major media production company. Like, so some kind of independent group that puts out content specifically on the internet. So like old video blogs or like comedy series, there's a lot of comedy troupes that put out stuff, a lot of YouTube series that people make. Those are all great. So this is going to be our favorites. Kicking off, we have Aaron.
Holderness Family Productions.
Can you spell that for me?
HOLDERNESS.
All right. You want to give us a quick rundown about what they do? Because this is going to be more specific to give a synopsis because people aren't going to know what this stuff is more than likely.
Sure. They do a bunch of sketch and skit comedy routines, often with singing and dancing. Cool. For instance, one of their most recent ones, which is pretty interesting, was they created a song explaining football to Taylor Swift fans when she started dating Travis Kelce.
Topical. All right. I like it. Do they do the opposite that explains Taylor Swift songs to people who watch football?
Possibly. I don't watch them often, but my wife
I tried listening because I felt like I was obligated, and I don't get it. All right. Jeremy, you're up.
I'm going to go with Professor Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I've only seen one of these that you guys played for me at LVO last year, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I need to sit down and watch the rest of them.
Woke up in grappler school.
That's one of the better ones.
Yeah.
Do you want to give a quick synopsis for people that don't understand? I mean, it's just kind of like sure. An anime comedy.
Yeah, it's Flash. I believe it's Flash animation. It's old timey. It's probably 15 years old now, 20 years. It's probably 25 years old. Jesus Christ. It's the Neely. Is it Kevin Neely? Is that who it is?
Parker.
You know these people.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of what is his first name? Yes, it is Neely.
So anyway, it's two brothers, and they go on these weird ass adventures. They do really strange voices, and it's very strange, but they're very, very smart and witty, and just it's awesome. It's brilliant.
It's Brad.
No, Neely. It's very funny. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, look it up. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, this is how the Adult Swim show South Park, not South Park, so Chilean, Illinois. Sorry, fuck. He also wrote for South Park, but this is how the show China, Illinois got started. It is his two characters that he started on this web series, and then he took them and really rewrote them, but they're very similar.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Rick and Morty was actually based on an old web series that Dan Harmon used to do. And so you can go back and watch basically the inspiration for Rick and Morty, and it's like same animation style. It's like written in crayon, basically, and it's like you move on, but it's pretty funny. All right, so my first one, I'm going to stop Parker from stealing my best one, because I know he's just sitting here waiting. I'm going to go with... What's going on? Sorry, my computer freaked out. I'm going to go with Helsing Abridged. A lot of people are probably familiar with the Abridged series. They're generally done by Team Four Star, I think, invented them. But basically, it's a YouTube channel that does abridged versions of anime and then dubs over the animation to put in their own words to make it funny. The probably the most famous one is the Dragon Ball Z Abridged. But Helsing Abridged is a special kind of hell that you can go to if you watch it. And it's amazing.
One of the notably,
I just want to give a quick disclaimer. It is incredibly offensive. So if you don't like offensive humor, stay away. But it is magical.
One of the things I love about Team Four Star is they find a way to make fun of the thing, but also somehow keep the ethos of it. Like it's not, they don't totally throw it. It is not just a spoof. Like,
yeah, they're not making fun of it.
Right. They don't totally throw away the concepts. And I think their best work is that series, because they do a really good job of pulling out how kind of comical the show is. But also they leave in all of the, you know, really rich characterizations and building for it, specifically the end. They barely touch the end and how you connect to the characters in the climax. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, it's only 12 episodes. They're about 15 minutes each. Like, you can get through it really quick if you want to. There's lots of swearing. There's lots of gory violence. It's based on the original anime. Helsing is basically what if Van Helsing captured Dracula and then used him as basically a super weapon against the other supernatural creatures in Europe. But anyway, that's my first pick. Parker, you get two.
Okay, so I'm going to do two of my favorite really geeky history web series back to back. The first one's called Extra History. It was originally started out as a web series about video games, video game production. And then one time, a video game called Rome Total War asked these guys, instead of making one about our game, could you make one just about Rome? And so they did, and that took off into its own channel. And now they have hundreds and hundreds of episodes. Their thing is, they have really awesome animation style, actually. So it's a little bit of animated history. But they take everything from a very narrative perspective. So one of the things I hate about history on the internet is because it's all so boring. They just take the same kind of History Channel formula that you can find on the History Channel that just makes you want to go to sleep. And Extra History is the opposite of that. It's very much a storytelling formula, a narrative formula about historical events. And it's just an absolute blast to watch. Hundreds of episodes, and each episode, you know, they'll do like little four episode chunks of different time periods. And they also pride themselves on doing some more mainstream stuff like the Sengoku Jidai, but also some very small stuff like Admiral Yi, which is an amazing person, but you never hear about him anywhere, especially in Western culture. So cool. Check it out. My next one is also a history one, but this one is just really fun and funny to watch. It's Sam O'Nella Academy. So it's It's supposed to be like Salmonella is the play on the word, but Salmonella Academy is, he specifically finds really, really weird topics in history, and he animates them very poorly and shit talks them constantly. It's another one of those, if you do not like offensive things or gross things or language, then you probably won't appreciate it, but I love all of that stuff. And his topics are amazing. Just really fun, warped shit. And he himself is a really funny writer. It is fun. All of his stuff are like one-off episodes. I think he has two-parters, and they're all like 7 minutes long. I can't watch them and drive because I laugh too hard. Like I can't do it. Or rather, even listen to them and drive. I guess I don't watch them and drive, but I can't even like put them on my speakers and drive like some history stuff I can do. It really is really, really hard. He's funny as shit. So Salmonella Academy is a really fun way to do really weird history stuff.
Cool. All right, back to me, and I've done it. I got the best one. Nobody picked the best one. I'm gonna go with Dr. Horrible Sing Along Blog.
Okay.
I'm gonna go ahead and say it's fine.
You don't like it?
No, I don't love it. It's not bad, but
I love it.
I know people swear by it, and so I don't dare diss it in front of them, but
it's on YouTube. It didn't used to be on YouTube, which was really annoying. You had to go find it on a website somewhere. And then they did a DVD set after a long time. But it's Neil Patrick Harris, Felicia Day, and what the hell is his name? Nathan Fillion. Do a spoof on superheroes, like web series that is also a musical. It's a three-part miniseries where Neil Patrick Harris plays Dr. Horrible, who's trying to destroy the world with his freeze ray. Nathan Fillion plays Captain Hammer, which is like the Superman equivalent who stops the villains. And Felicia Day is Dr. Horrible's love interest in the show. And it's just magical. The singing, the lyrics, the acting, it's all amazing. I love it. Apparently Parker hates quality. I don't know. You can talk to him about it later. But that's all I got. Jeremy, you're up.
I'm going to go with one that's pretty mainstream. Hot Ones, where they talk with...
Hot Ones?
Yeah. They talk to stars of the day or athletes or whatever and eat hot wings. And it's pretty fucking funny. Yeah.
Yeah, they get up to the, like, 2 million Scoville range, and then you just have, like, random celebrities eating it. My favorite was, there's a Shia LaBeouf's pretty good, because he's on there, and he actually eats hot stuff, so he's going through them, and he's like, oh, wow, this one's actually hot. Ladies and gentlemen, the show is real. I thought you were just putting tomato sauce on here and lying to people. Like, oh, these are hot. Like, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
There's a crazy amount of celebrities. They've done like hundreds of episodes now. There's so many people have done it.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I love it when they get to the point where the celebrities start hallucinating because they're eating stuff that's so hot. It's pretty fun. All right, Aaron, do you have another one for us?
No.
Damn. All right, well, if you think of one, just chime in. All right, Jeremy, do you have a final selection?
I don't want to... All right, I'm going to go with something from damn near 25 years ago as well.
Oh yeah, those are the good ones.
Homestar Runner.
Is that Trogdor?
Yep,
that's where that came from. There's several different series on the show. Do you like the Strong Bad emails? Is that what you're going with?
The Strong Bad is the emails is my favorite part.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do Strong Bad. Delorted. So Strong Bad emails
was the name of the series that.
Yeah, you know. And then that's by Homestar Runner.
Homestarrunner.com was the website. Yeah. Yeah.
So just him reading weird emails?
Emails. He was reading emails and it's
responding
just,
to them.
Yeah, the tone and the attitude of it is just hilarious. It's of its time. I don't know that it's even funny anymore, honestly. I haven't you know what I mean? It's one of those things that
straight
of its
out of 2002, like the hardcore comedy.
Yeah.
No, I'd be interested to go back. I've seen some small clips of his stuff back in the day, but
and I mean, Trogdor, everybody knows what that is, came out of that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Every town needs a poopsmith. Like,
Poopsmith.
Dude.
Yeah.
Little brother.
Oh, I lied. I've got one now.
Yay!
Ooh. Okay, so we're going to divulge more personal information than I care to share.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
That's what podcasts are for.
Is it? Okay.
Is this what you watch on sex day?
No. So I usually fall asleep looking at my phone. My wife hates it. But, you know, anyway, without getting to how I fall asleep, I have found YouTube short clips to be therapeutic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give a shout out to American Truck Drivers.
Okay. That's the name of the channel?
It is the name of the channel. If you just want to watch people crashing their cars and doing dumb shit, it's just yeah. dash cam video that truckers will upload to, quote unquote, promote safe driving.
Yeah.
I almost want to make my kids like watch all of these to be mm-hmm. like, yeah, you never know when someone else is going to do something yeah. fucking stupid. Yeah. So yeah, watching people do dumb things in cars, yeah, that's not bad. So American Truck Drivers.
I always had a fascination with dash cam videos, so I definitely get this. I've sat for no less than 6 hours watching just dash cam videos. Specifically ones from Russia, because Russia for a long time had a law where neither person was at fault if you didn't have evidence. And so people drive like complete fucking maniacs because they get away with it. So everyone in the country now has a dash cam, or else you just get your car T-boned and they drive away. But yeah, I definitely feel that one.
And I'll give you my last one. Still on me. One?
Okay. Go. Yeah. Okay.
You go. I'll have to debate.
Okay. I got my last one. All right. This one is near and dear to my heart. It's got several things I love about this series, but, unfortunately, we'll never get the fourth installment because the creator passed away a couple years ago. It is The Great Potato War. It is a YouTube series by a Minecraft player named Technoblade, who generally plays super competitive PvP Minecraft, which sounds like an oxymoron, but it is real things that some people do. But the whole point of the video was he joins this modded server called... Skycraft, I think it is. And basically in that, it's like an RPG world where it's like playing WoW, but in Minecraft, where you join and you can like farm things, you can like gain XP, you can cast spells, little stuff like that. But the point of the video was he was just creating content on for his YouTube channel one day. And he was like, what if I just started making a bunch of potatoes to sell them to get this thing? And then he realized that like you can become best on server at things. And so one of the things was collecting the most of every vegetable. And so he starts farming potatoes, and then, like, it just goes off the rails. He basically starts committing war crimes against other people on the server to try and get the top spot. And then another YouTuber named Squidboy is the current leader holder. And I'm not exaggerating that he commits actual espionage and potential, like, actual psychological warfare against a person in real life to get the number one potato ranking.
He was also, rest in peace, like, a really funny writer.
He is exactly my kind of humor as a YouTuber. He is engaging, he's smart, he's funny, but also he's one of those, like, really driven, smart people. Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, he turned randomly playing a video game and got in, like, enjoyed farming, and he turned that into one of the most amazing YouTube series I've ever seen. And the production value on it is great, and he's one of the most entertaining people I've ever seen. Please, even if you only watch 5 minutes of the video, go watch The Great Potato War. There's three videos. I think it's a grand total of like 2 hours.
You can't just watch 5 minutes. It's such an engrossing story. Yeah. It's one of the most intriguing stories, well paced. Yeah. Like, it's amazing. It has one of my favorite lines in internet history, which is, he's playing checkers, I'm farming potatoes.
Yeah. <It's> like... it's mesmerizing. Like, and it's like, because you don't actually watch him farm, right? It's him telling the story of a battle with another player for top spot on the server that, I'm not exaggerating, lasted for almost 4 years, that they were going back and forth trying to get the number one.
Was it really?
Spot.
4 years?
No, it was. The videos come out like 8 months apart. Like, it's a huge thing. And like the first video encapsulated almost 6 months of real time that he's trying to like get the top spot. And it's like he goes into the actual like code of the game explaining how he's trying to get an advantage. Because like
how can you farm potatoes faster? It's like they start getting into like they have people reading the code, finding mathematical glitches in the system that can actually help them get higher rates. Because if somebody has a head start on you and they do nothing but farm potatoes, it sounds so stupid. Like, how could you ever catch them? It's like Aaron, if we were both driving our car and we were trying to see who could get more miles on our car, but I had a 100,000-mile head start, how would you ever beat me? And it's just like, you can't. Like, because it's automated, right? Like it's a whole thing. But it's the point of the video is not what happens in the video, but please go watch it.
It is fascinating.
Even if you only do it for 5 minutes. It's literally magical. I don't even understand how.
If anyone doesn't vote for you, they're wrong for the end of this. Just so you know, I might break my rule and actually vote this time for you because you caught Potato War. I didn't catch it, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, if they don't,
was terrified you were going to take it.
Yeah,
nostalgia and all of that might catch a couple votes on my end, but yeah. My favorite thing I think you've ever shown me was watching the Potato War.
And it's so good.
I was fascinated. It was like watching a documentary of something you never imagined could exist. Yeah. And it does, and it's completely fucking fascinating.
It's one of the best documentary series I've ever seen. It's not just and he's also really funny. It's great.
It's like the perfect content because it's educational, it's informative, it's funny, it's engaging. It's got everything. Like it's the best show. All right, Parker, you got one last pick.
Ugh, how do I follow that?
Doesn't
I'm going
to
go. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Trash.
Well, I think I know what you're going to pick.
Ooh, really?
Does it start with a C?
Yes.
Is it three words?
No. Oh. What could it? What do you?
I thought you were going with C and H.
C and H.
Comic series? Animated? Some guns?
Oh, I do like that. Oh, that's a good one. But I thought
for sure you were going with that.
But that one does.
Because that was my. If you took Potato War, I was taking that.
Oh. Honestly, no. And you know the reason why? Is because I don't actually go back to that website very much. But I do go back to these guys a lot.
Go for it.
And I'm going to go with College Humor, is what I call them. But they're now called Dropout, is what they're called. Which they kind of rebranded and bought by another company, and they call it Dropout now. But they are responsible for some of my favorite stuff ever, and I always, always enjoy watching their content. It doesn't matter what it is.
So you do need to pick a specific series.
I know. They've done a ton of stuff. So I'm going to go with their Pete Holmes Batman series.
Yeah.
I love the Pete Holmes Batman series.
That's a good one. They got Patton Oswalt on there one time. Oh, my God. Just, he's so funny.
He's sleeping. also, whenever he's interrogating the, like, party clown.
Swear to me.
Yeah, he's like, where are they?
He's like, he's like, where's what?
I just had two wine coolers before the party, man. Yeah.
For people that don't know, it's basically a mockumentary series about how ridiculous Batman is.
Yeah, and
it's made by a little comedy troupe that used to work for College Humor, and it's very, very funny.
Yeah, Pete Holmes's Batman is wonderful.
What if Batman was actually just an eccentric idiot instead of an eccentric brooding weirdo?
Yeah. Yeah, even the Riddler one, which is the weakest one, the Riddler one is funny.
Is it helicopter?
He calls, Lucius, help me with a riddle. Is it helicopter?
Is it a helicopter?
That's what I said.
I think you just wanted me to was right. Anyway.
That Batman series is one of the most quotable things. It's super fun.
I never take lives. I never kill.
This is a gun? Anyway, yeah, it's definitely quotable. Aaron, did you have a final pick for us? Do you want to leave it at two?
No. Let's go with artist Jody Steele.
What is this about?
She does costume and cosplay makeup artist, makeup art. And so she transforms herself into X. Like, pick whatever character. And it's just
those are cool.
Beginning to end, how she transforms her face to look like whatever.
Hmm. I've seen a lot of those where they do like a female Venom, and like the mouth goes all the way down to like the middle of her chest, and it's like the tongue and teeth are painted on their neck.
Yep,
that's really cool
stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of cool illusions. Yeah,
Yeah, like she'll do half of her face as a man and half as a woman, and she'll hold up a, you know, a piece of paper, and it's just obviously she's really good at her, you know, what she does. But like you would swear that's a dude, and then she's just in it, you know, glamour and whatever. Anyway, like I said, shit, you can just fall asleep watching.
I find it very convenient that you watch stupid videos when you're falling asleep, because I can message you really late and you'll answer because you're on your phone.
It's possible.
All right. Honorable mentions. I would like to shout out another College Humor series, If Google Was a Guy. And it's basically just a dude sitting at a desk and people ask him questions as if they were typing into their Google search bar. And so, like, the first question in the entire series is, like, today, tomorrow, New Zealand? And he's like, yes. And it's just like, and he's just in a dead end job and he fucking hates it. And then, like, the number of people asking for porn is alarming.
Yeah. What is Prime Meridian? What is Prime Meridian?
And then they get really inventive with it because they have a girl on that pretends to be Siri. So it's like, Siri, show me pictures of the Serengeti. And she's like, oh God, my Siri just kicked up. And she's like, more pictures of spaghetti. And it's like, no, that's not what she wants. It's great. But the Bitcoin guy on there is fucking hysterical.
Yeah.
It's like, what is Bitcoin? It's like, you just ruined your life.
I had an honorable mention that was, I decided to go off of it because Jeremy went on to Homestar Runner. But my favorite Homestar Runner is actually Teen Girl Squad. I really like Teen Girl Squad. That one's also kid safe. It's fun. And I show my teenagers Teen Girl Squad in my classroom. And they're like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. It's a very ridiculous version of teenagers. But clearly the person who wrote it knows teenagers because it's pretty good. If you've never seen Teen Girl Squad, it's fun.
Anybody else? Aaron's got like 8 more in the chamber, I can tell.
No, we're done.
Okay. I have one more, and I'm a big nerd on YouTube, so I like to do things that are well produced but teach me things. If anyone's Dami Lee, Damilee, one word, her channel is super cool. Channel all about architecture, which I know as soon as I say that, you go, that sounds boring as shit, but she purposely finds really wacky things to do architecture for. So she did like the architecture of Dune cities, like the architecture of like cyberpunk stuff from different. She did like the architecture of the Sphere, the thing they just made in Las Vegas. And so she'll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she goes into a lot of really. And the production value of her videos is insane. Like it is super good. So she's actually a relatively new channel, but she is exploding in popularity because the production value is crazy. And her topics are just fascinating. Dami Lee is really cool. Even if you know nothing about architecture, it's still fascinating stuff.
I have one more recommend.
Go for it.
Potato War.
Yeah. Potato. I'm not kidding.
Don't watch it. Yeah, just do Potato War.
I have 3 pieces of content on mine. I think Potato War might be the best.
I'm not going to lie right now. I realize it's been a year since I've seen Potato War. I'm going to watch it now, and I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to watch Potato War again. That's how good it is.
Helsing and Bridge is kind of similar to that. Like we used to call it getting trapped. We'd be at the store at 3 a.m. and people are like, oh man, I gotta be at work in like 5 hours. I'm like, hold on a second, let me show you this quick video. And I put on the first episode of Helsing and Bridge.
Yep.
And nobody would leave until the series was over. Like, it's so funny that we would just be crying laughing for 3 hours straight.
It is pretty good.
It's great. Oh, did you watch it?
Just watched the first episode.
Okay. All right, good. My last shout out is it's just a generic concept, really, but it's probably the majority of content I absorb if you actually just add up screen time, is animated music videos called AMVs. Basically, people just take their favorite scenes from animes, whatever anime. They're literally for every single one, so you can always find. There's thousands and thousands of them on the internet. But basically, they'll just clip their favorite songs and they'll make a music video out of the animes they like. And so they'll sync all the action to the music and the meaning of the songs and everything. It is super great. But I'll basically just do it when I'm working on my computer. I'm always doing like audio editing or video editing or, you know, typing up notes and stuff or doing D&D prep. And I'll just put it on in one of my monitors. And it's a great, like, get stuff done media. It's kind of like listening to an audiobook because you can do it while doing something else. And that's the thing I love about it. And so it helps drive my productivity because I don't get bored while I'm working. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for tuning in, and thank you guys for humoring me. I know this was kind of an off-the-wall topic category, but I'm really passionate about the three pieces of media I had, so I wanted people to know about them. So I thought this was a good way to get it out there.
This is one of the ones that I think people are going to have a hard time voting for unless they recognize something. But at the same time, it'll probably be the most informative, like one of the ones that people go, oh, well, this actually is – it'll be fun to listen to rather than just vote for, I guess.
Aaron, are you going to watch Potato War? I'll send you the link.
Send it
only after you watch Blood of Heroes.
I will watch Blood of Heroes if you watch. What is it? Is it streaming? Hold on.
I don't fucking know.
You can probably get it for free on YouTube.
You already promised to watch it after I watched.
I know it's on the list. I actually have it on the list.
But I haven't reminded you for 6.4 months. But I felt it was due.
Actually, is it actually just on YouTube?
I'm sure the whole thing is.
No,
just
it's the trailer. Okay. I was like, Jesus Christ.
It would not shock me if somebody had just put it on YouTube and nobody gave a
shit. And nobody cared. Yeah. There's a Blood of Heroes role playing game.
Yeah.
Well, we know what we're gonna do for the next podcast. Blood of Heroes role play.
Video game. I don't see it streaming. If I can watch it for free, I'll watch it probably Friday.
If you told me that one of our podcasts or a special episode, maybe, you know, subscribers only, we just play a single session of Blood of Heroes RPG, I'd be down.
I like the idea of like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 with us watching that movie.
I would be in. Oh.
Nice.
I would be in.
That would be great. New Patreon tier, watch shitty movies with the cast. Oh. we'll just live stream it on Discord.
That's like printing money.
I know, right? It was the fucking everyone will join. $1,000 doesn't matter. Everyone's joining.
What I'm also excited for is for us to actually enjoy it, and then Aaron finds vindication. That'll be the way we turn that corner at the end. I like that.
Are you making a Captain Holt reference on purpose?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's on Netflix right now, so I'm actually going to watch
it. It is amazing.
It's so good.
But did you know that I referred to Aaron as Captain Holt on stream?
No.
When I was narrating his game on the Twitch stream.
No,
I was like, hey, anybody doesn't know what Aaron's like, just he's like Captain Holt. Just, that's exactly what he's like. So you're like, vindication! Anyway. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Later.
Good night.
Bye.